called problem gamblers. That is a large, large number based on their criteria. And what we're seeing right now is the young men are probably the most vulnerable right now, though it's not, it does not discriminate with anybody. We also see a large percentage of women between the ages of 40 and 60 experiencing severe issues with that right now. I will say one thing that we do know about all the other addictions, that the rate of suicide with problem gamblers is higher than any other of the other addictions. And it makes sense. You know, you think about how much money is lost as a result of problem gambling and the ability to get that money back. So if you lose $75,000, it's hard to get $75,000 back. When I was a therapist, there was a family that came in, they
I'm Stan Raven. I used to be from somewhere else, but I'm not there anymore. And you are listening to WGXC Acro 90.7 FM.
On Monday, August 1st, tune in WGXC 90.7 FM to hear all sorts of creative community voices, including at 10 a.m., hop on the Afrosonic Taxi for a trip to Morocco. Then at 11 a.m., Brendan Donegan is playing favorites with Gang of Four, live from the WGXC Hudson Studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. After the local news at noon, it's time for the Deep Threes show, this week with tracks from jazz legend Roy Campbell and Henry Threadgill and the video artist Namjoon Pike. At 4 p.m., it's time for the WGXC afternoon show, live from Western Massachusetts with Kieran Riley as your host. And then at 10 p.m., we go live to Acro with Nick and Lisa from Palinville with their Radiant Point show with all sorts of new music on 90.7 FM WGXC. On Saturday, August 6th, PS21 is putting on a show in Chatham's Crellin Park for Crellin Park Day. It's an interactive program called 846, a retelling of Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. Put on by the Jamal Jackson Dance Company. And it's at 3 p.m. on Saturday, August 6th in Crellin Park in Chatham. Find out more in the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. And you can also list your own events there to be read on the radio at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We love Roll Call, y'all. Boogie Down Productions, Rob Bass, Dana Dane, Molly Marr, Olatunji, Chuck D, Ray Charles, EPMD, EU, Alberta Hunter, Run DMC, Stetsasonic, Sugar Bear, John Coltrane, Big Daddy Kane, Salt and Pepper, Luther Vandross, McCoy Tyner, Biz Marquee, New Edition, Otis Redding, Anita Baker, Thelonious Monk, Marcus Miller, Branford Marcellus, James Brown, Wayne Shorter, Tracy Chapman, Miles Davis, Force MDs, Oliver Nelson, Fred Wesley, Maceo, Janet Jackson, Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, George Clinton, Count Basie, M2 May, Stevie Wonder, Bobby McFerrin, Dexter Gordon, Sam Cooke, Parliament Funkadelic, Al Jarreau, Teddy Pendergrass, Joe Williams, Wynton Marsalis, Phyllis Hyman, Sade, Sarah Vaughan, Roland Kirk, Keith Sweat, Cool Moe Dee, Prince, Ella Fitzgerald, Diana Reeves, Aretha Franklin, Bob Marley, Bessie Smith, Whitney Houston, Dionne Warwick, Steel Pulse, Little Richard, Mahalia Jackson, Jackie Wilson, Cannonball and Nat Adderley, Quincy Jones, Marvin Gaye, Charles Mingus, and Mary Lou Williams. We want to thank you all for making our lives just a little brighter here on We Love Radio.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Times Union reports that Amtrak workers at local stations July 30th helped riders make alternate plans after service was disrupted by chunks of the central warehouse falling onto the rail line that runs next to the deteriorating former storage facility. Amtrak is providing bus service between the Albany Rensselaer and Schenectady stations for the Lakeshore Limited, Maple Leaf, and Ethan Allen Express trains after Empire service was shut down west of Albany. At the Saratoga Springs train station on July 30th, passengers were loaded from the train to buses to connect with the next train station on their stop because of the gap in service. The disruption was caused by safety concerns over the building temporarily suspending Empire service west of Albany and the Lakeshore Limited, which runs from Boston to Chicago. It is affecting service north and east of Albany, according to Amtrak's website. The line runs west to Schenectady before turning northeast to Saratoga Springs. Starting July 29th, service to Saratoga Springs was unavailable, and service to Burlington, Vermont required passengers to take a bus to Saratoga Springs before getting on a train. Full Amtrak service is in effect between Rensselaer and New York City. The city of Albany, July 28th, declared a state of emergency. A structural engineering report the city received earlier in the week said parts of the exterior southern wall of the central warehouse are in danger of imminent collapse. Officials with the city and Amtrak did not return calls for updates as of the afternoon of July 30th. Bruce Becker, communications director with Empire State Passengers Association, said, quote, "We understand that at least one additional train across upstate New York will be starting, we believe, on August 1st, although full service is not slated to resume immediately," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that the Kiskatom Fire Department has been awarded a $50,000 grant to fund the construction of a medevac helicopter landing zone at the firehouse on State Route 32. The award was announced July 29th by State Senator Michelle Hinchey, whose office awarded the state and municipal facilities capital grant. Kiskatom Fire Chief Peter Kuzminski thanked Hinchey for the funding. Quote, "This landing pad will make the community and the first responders safer," unquote, Kuzminski said. The project would include the construction of an access road from State Route 32, built large enough to accommodate any responding fire trucks and ambulance vehicles needed to safely transfer patients to an aircraft, as well as sufficient outdoor lighting to make the helipad fully functional at night. Medevac helicopters administered by Albany Medical Center, the New York State Police, and other regional agencies will be able to use the helipad for emergency transports requested by Greene County. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com. Anya D. Lampart Alvarez and Larry Parnas are reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that a network of indoor cannabis farms could soon replace the long-gone anchor stores at the Berkshire Mall, located outside of Pittsfield in Lanesboro, Massachusetts. The Lanesboro Select Board this week agreed to begin negotiations for a host community agreement with JMJ Holdings Corp., a Massachusetts company looking to buy the now-closed mall and build out its former commercial spaces as cannabis farms. The sale of the property to Maran Namuri Kalantari of Santa Monica, California, for $8 million was recorded July 29th. It is not yet clear what the nature of the relationship between the buyer and JMJ Holdings might be. Blake M. Mensing of JMJ Holdings said the corporation plans to prepare space for cultivation, including the acquisition of licenses for manufacturing and distribution from the State Cannabis Control Commission. In doing so, the company would enable those interested in entering the industry to save time. The corporation would line up water supplies for cannabis cultivation and consider installing solar panels on the sprawling mall roof system to supply power for indoor cultivation. The Berkshire Mall was built in 1988 and was closed in 2019, leaving Target the only business open in the 16.5-acre center off Cheshire Road. A community outreach meeting is planned for August or September. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Ariel Zangler reports in the Daily Freeman that the city of Kingston has declared a housing emergency. Rent control regulations can now be enacted on city properties built prior to 1974 that have six or more units. The Common Council voted 7-1 on July 28th for a resolution declaring a housing emergency in the city and enacting regulations under the state's Emergency Tenant Protection Act. Minority Leader Michael Oliveri, a registered Democrat who won the Ward 7 election on the Republican Party line, was the lone no vote. Mayor Steve Noble signed the legislation into law on July 29th. Noble said in a statement, and I quote, "I am pleased to be able to codify this legislation and to implement these tenant protections here in Kingston. We have known we have a housing crisis in Kingston, and this is yet another step we are taking to protect our residents and make sure that everyone who wishes to live in Kingston is able to. With this law, there are more than 1,200 rental units that are now entitled to rent stabilization," end quote. An undeclared housing crisis exists throughout the Hudson Valley, with few new affordable housing going on the market recently. The problem of higher rents and few available units was made worse by the pandemic, with an influx of new wealthy homeowners and renters moving into the area from New York City recently. Majority Leader Rita Worthington, Democrat Ward 4, said, and I quote, "We are living in a time where housing, in particular, affordable housing, is almost non-existent. There is a housing crisis in our city. This resolution does not and will not solve the entirety of the crisis that we find ourselves in. But I do believe it is a step in the right direction," end quote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Roger Hannigan Gilson in the Times Union digs into the financial disclosures obtained from the campaign of Jamie Chaney, a candidate running for the new 19th congressional district seat in a primary August 23rd against fellow Democrat Josh Riley. Chaney has loaned her primary campaign $100,000. As an individual, Chaney has joint assets valued at between just under $4 million and just under $15 million, as candidates must only categorize their assets by ranges of value. She is a landlord to a property in New York City and another in Rhinebeck. She also owns and lives in a 65-acre farm in Rhinebeck. She is currently making money from consulting fees and dividends as well as the rental properties. According to a statement from her campaign, and I quote, "Jamie Chaney started a successful business that holds Wall Street accountable by advocating for working parents to have rights like comprehensive health care, child care, and flexible work hours. She is running for Congress to protect reproductive health care, pass meaningful gun reform, and help working families across the district," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that progressive New York lawmakers and environmental activists continue to push for a special session of the legislature to address climate change. Specifically, they want to vote on a bill meant to require the New York Power Authority to only provide renewable forms of power to customers. Assemblyperson Jessica Gonzalez Rojas said, and I quote, "As elected officials, we owe it to our constituents to do everything we can to combat this existential crisis. Our continued inaction will only perpetuate the injustices we are elected to address. Let's act with the urgency that the climate crisis demands," end quote. So far, Governor Kathy Hochul has given no indication that she wants to hold a second special session this summer. After a spat of mass shootings, Albany lawmakers passed some gun laws in a special session earlier this summer. And you can read that full story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. Visit our website for local weather updates, town meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or to make a one-time donation. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXE Renewable Weather Forecast, which we start each day with the lowest price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Gas Buddy website says that the Citco on Route 23 in Cairo has the lowest prices in Greene County right now with $4.47. They are charging a gallon of gas. Then we look at the air quality forecast in the area, and it's 21, much better than the last few days. So good air quality on Sunday. Then the UV index is our next measure of the weather, and it is an 8, very high. And scientists recommend you wear a shirt, a hat, and sunscreen between the hours of 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. to avoid the powerful rays of the sun. National Weather Service in Albany says Sunday should be mostly sunny, good for local solar panels, with a high near 82 and a wind becoming north around 6 miles per hour, spinning local windmills. Sunday night should be mostly cloudy, becoming clear later on with a low around 61 and a southwest wind 3 to 5 miles per hour. Monday, there's a 20% chance of showers between noon and 1 p.m. Mostly sunny is the forecast for the rest of the day, with a high near 82 and a wind from the south around 6 miles per hour in the afternoon. Monday night, there is a 20% chance of showers after 2 a.m. Otherwise, it'll be partly cloudy with a low around 65 and a south wind 3 to 5 miles per hour. Tuesday, there's a 30% chance of rain. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 84 and a low around 62. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. Turn out for the Deep in the Valley show Saturday, August 20th, put on by WGXC volunteer programmer Andy French, who does the Crawl Out from the Fallout show once a month on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. on WGXC, and his Raven Sings the Blues organization, with performances from Chris Forsythe, Ryan Jewell, Bill Nace, Wet Tuna, and others Saturday, August 20th from 11:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the From the Ground Brewery in Red Hook. That's the Deep in the Valley show, Saturday, August 20th. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. On July 25th, Democrats Josh Riley and Jamie Chaney both spoke at a candidate forum for the New York 19 new congressional district. In Delhi, they spoke, and the special election they're running against each other in is on August 23rd. Here is one question asked to Democrats Jamie Chaney and Josh Riley.
Jamie, we will start with you. So our first questions all deal with more local issues, and then we'll get into some of the national issues. Jamie, what relationships do you have in our district that could form a basis of support through activism, organizing, work, or personal networks to make a successful campaign? And part two, how will you communicate and collaborate with constituents in office if you win?
Absolutely, that's an excellent question, because it is the basis of any good campaign, any good representation. So my professional background has been working with companies that work across New York State. We have companies that work within the district. I think, though, more importantly, particularly when we look at this campaign, the reality is we do not win this district on Democratic turnout. We need someone who can truly pull crossover, and not just in theory, but can actually point to voters who are ready to cross the aisle because of their demonstration for doing work for this district and for the state as a whole. I have been very, very involved in agriculture in New York State for the last decade. I've been very involved specifically in the 4-H program, for those of you who are familiar with that. And a couple weeks ago, when I was actually out in Ithaca, someone said to me, wait, there's something going on at the Dutchess County Legislature you need to know about. And I said, well, Dutchess County, that's not in the district. And they said, well, no, it's not. But so as you are all probably aware, Mark Molinaro, our GOP opponent, presides over the Dutchess County legislature currently. And someone from our local agricultural community, someone who I don't know well, he has a farm near ours, but someone who's seen me roll up my sleeves in this community for the last 8.5 years at this point, went to the legislature to use the public comment period to say to Mark, I just heard Jamie Cheney's running for Congress, and I'm here to tell you that I'm switching my party registration. I'm a lifelong Republican, and I'm going to vote for her because I've seen her roll up her sleeves. I've seen her roll up her sleeves at county fairs. I've seen her roll up her sleeves 4-H. I've seen her roll up her sleeves when buying and selling steers. I've seen her in action. I know she's committed to this community, and I know she'll do the work. Having a network like that, that doesn't just play on our traditional Democratic networks, but allows us a true, true path to crossover, is going to be the key to this election. This is a district where we have to have crossover to win. In terms of how we will work closely with communities, I think Representative Delgado did a phenomenal job, and it's something that we're hearing about on the ground from independents, Republicans, and Democrats alike. He truly took the time to build advisory councils and took into account communities' views on his bills. So we will do that as well. I will say, though, that we will go one step further. So while he famously did that in agriculture, and that's the advisory council that you often hear about, we've heard from two groups that say repeatedly, we wish there'd been an advisory council to join. We look forward to forming those councils as well. Bipartisan, rooted in large and small communities, and bringing all of those views to the table for a meeting regularly.
That's great. Thank you, Jamie. I did let that go a little over, so I'll try to be a little bit more on top of that, and I'll give Josh an extra 30 seconds as well. Josh, same question.
All right, we're off to a great start. Well, first of all, Jamie, I hope you're feeling okay. Please get lots of rest, water, whatever the doctor orders. And I hope you're feeling better. Everybody, it's so good to see you. Thank you for organizing this and coming out. What a beautiful, beautiful setting to have this this conversation. So as Jamie helpfully pointed out, Mark Molinaro is from Dutchess County, which is not in this district. So the first part of my answer to this question is, as the only candidate in the race who was born in the district, who was raised in the district, who actually lives in the district, I think that's going to give us a big advantage in the general election against Mark Molinaro, who is outside of the district and abandoning his community to run here. Part of my deep ties in this district actually come right here to Delhi. When I was growing up in Endicott in the late 90s, early 2000s, my family worked in the IBM plants that we had there. My dad was a maintenance worker. And I remember when the news was coming out about the layoffs and the plant closed down. And my dad saw the writing on the wall that IBM was going to close down, all those jobs were going to get shipped overseas. And what he did was he went to his manager and asked to be placed on the graveyard shift at the plant. That's the shift that works overnight. And he did that so that he could go to work at night while IBM was still open, come home in the morning, he'd take a quick shower, grab a bite to eat, and then he jumped in the car and he drove out here to Delhi to take landscape architecture classes at SUNY Delhi, because you can't ship those jobs overseas. And he got his college degree. He never had a college degree, didn't attend college until 2004. I make fun of him because it was a year after I got mine, so I beat him to it. But I got to tell you, he did that and took those classes with kids who were half his age at that point. And I think that took a huge amount of courage. And I've never been so proud of anybody as I was of my dad coming out here to Delhi to get his degree. And what it taught me is that when we face adversity, we pull together, we push through, and we fight back. We don't cower from it. When my dad saw the plants were closing down, instead of cowering and saying, woe is me, he asked to go on the graveyard shift so he could take classes over here at SUNY Delhi. And I'll tell you what, we as a country and a community are facing some really big challenges right now. We had a Supreme Court just tell us guns are more important than women. We've got a middle class that's eroding. We've got a planet that's burning and a democracy that's crumbling. And in the face of all that adversity, I'm telling you, we're going to pull together and overcome it. So,
on July 25th, Democrats Josh Riley and Jamie Cheney both spoke at a candidate forum for the New York 19 new congressional district. In Delhi, they spoke, and the special election they're running against each other in is on August 23rd. Here is one question asked to Democrats Jamie Chaney and Josh Riley.
Our next question is about affordable health care. Jamie, affordable health care is a significant issue in rural America, including Delaware County. What actions do you believe should be taken to expand access to affordable health care? Do you support, part two, do you support Medicare for all? Why or why not? And I'll give you a 30-second warning.
Again, a great question and one I think that impacts all of our lives every day. As you've mentioned in the opener, I've spent my career thinking about the benefits that allow families to be successful and advocating for those benefits. And healthcare is at the top of the list. I have sat around a lot of tables articulating why this is the single benefit that we know companies must provide for working families. And we need to think about access in all ways. So we need to think about access in terms of cost, but I think the thing I am most struck by in this district is, while the national conversation may be around cost, cost becomes almost irrelevant if you simply can't get there. So not only do we need to address cost, but we need to address access. I have heard so many stories of people traveling an hour or 2 hours for a doctor's appointment unless they're willing to wait 6 months, and this is against a background where there's no child care, where gas costs $5 a gallon. And then someone says, well, how about telehealth? Let's do that. That should work. I think everyone there knows exactly how broadband works in this district. And while telehealth right now may seem like a great idea in our urban centers, this is exactly the reason I'm running, because we need to bring the reality of life in a rural district into the national policy landscape. If we're serious about telehealth, which can be a key part of healthcare access, we need to treat broadband in rural areas as a public utility. So I see those things as intertwined. In terms of Medicare for all, obviously the current proposal that's on the floor would probably triple our current federal budget. I'm also concerned about the fact that the benefits that many of our labor partners have worked for long periods of time to commit to their members wouldn't be honored under Medicare for all, and labor partners are a critical part of this conversation. That said, I strongly believe that healthcare is a human right and that there should be a public option.
Thank you, Jamie. Josh, same question.
Great. Yeah, I the first case I took out of law school, a lot of my classmates went to Wall Street and worked for the banks. I decided, of all places, to go to Florida to sue the Florida government, working in partnership with the American Academy of Pediatrics, and we argued, as part of that case, that healthcare in this country should be a civil right. And I believe that as much today as I did when I made that argument in court. Things we need to do right away around the healthcare system is, number one, let's all remember here as Democrats, we are all much better off on this issue than the Republicans who voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. So the differences we all talk about around healthcare are on the margins when it's compared to a party that's trying to tear down the entire system. Some things that we should do immediately to improve access to health care. Number one, I would like to lower the Medicare eligibility age down to 55 years old. So once you're 55, you can get into the program. What that actually does is strengthen the Medicare system by putting a healthier cohort into it. It also lowers the cost of private insurance by taking that oldest and least healthy population out of the private health care system. I would also allow Medicare to negotiate prescription drug costs. We're seeing so many families, so many seniors on a fixed income today who are really struggling to get by, making impossible choices between the medicines they need and the groceries to feed their family. There's no reason whatsoever that we can't negotiate prescription drug costs. The only reason we're not doing it is because the pharmaceutical industry has spent about $14 million in the 2020 election cycle buying politicians, shipping them down to Washington, and having them vote for the pharmaceutical industry's interests instead of for your interests. And so if we can do that, we can save billions of dollars in the budget and help families make ends meet. The last thing, just very quickly, there's a provision in Obamacare called the medical loss ratio. It basically says 85 cents of every dollar you spend on health insurance has to go to your care and not to lobbying and nonsense like executive compensation. I think it's time that we increase that and put more money into your care and less into profits.
On July 25th, Democrats Josh Riley and Jamie Chaney both spoke at a candidate forum for the New York 19 new congressional district. In Delhi, they spoke, and the special election they're running against each other in is on August 23rd. Here is one.